Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hey, good afternoon for those of you who are on the East Coast, and good morning for those still on the West Coast. My name's Rick Thiemann. I'm your host for the day on the show, What's Leadership Got to Do with It? My firm is called The Executive Group. I've been in business for about 20 years, and have worked in various aspects of the business world. And last week's show was on fundamental components of leadership, the basics of leadership, and today's program is a continuation of that. And my guest on the show is Dr. Dave Watterson, who was a guest not too long ago when we did a show on called Making Sense of Testing. And Dr. Watterson and I are going to talk about some of the things that he has worked on and I've worked on with him and worked on together in terms of leadership. And kind of today's leadership component piece, just going to talk about kind of the leadership passage and how you kind of move your leaders along and some of the things that go into leadership development. So welcome, Dr. Dave. Great to have you back again.
Well, it's very nice to be back, and I think this is a really important topic because, as you say, use the word passage, but it's a passage, it's a journey, it's a process, and I know you've certainly played an active part in that process with the leaders that you've worked with over the years, and it certainly is a rewarding process, but also a fairly complex one.
I think it's a lot more complex than most people realize, and I know that until I began to really study the world of leadership, I didn't realize its complexity. And of course, some things you can make overly complex that you don't need to, but for those of you who are listening today, if you've listened to last week's show, you know, we got into the six fundamental component pieces of the strong leadership process, leadership program, and those six fundamental things were a strong business model, being able to have a degree of what the competencies are necessary to map to that business model. We spoke about the third piece is a strong assessment process, which we're going to go into further today. The fourth piece is a strong feedback mechanism that really gives tough, hard-hitting, tough love back to the executive. The fifth one is the accountability factor to make people hold themselves accountable to continue through rather than just kind of a checklist of things that I did in terms of I did my MBO, I did my 360, so to speak. And then the last piece is that what's the ongoing development that continues that process. But the reason I've asked Dave back on the phone is because he has done a tremendous amount of work in the world of leadership, especially using the 16PF and other component instruments. And we're going to tie in assessments and behavior and personality and leadership as kind of the mix of today's show. And I'm going to ask Dave here in a second to kind of speak to what we call the passage of leadership. Dave has developed a very interesting pyramid model that focuses on kind of the evolution, the stages of leadership, and I'd like him to speak to, but it's about being able to help leaders become aware. And the premise of the book, What's Leadership Got to Do with It, really isn't about leadership per se, as these last two shows, or that last show and this show has been. The premise of the book, What's Leadership Got to Do with It, is the fundamental five things that I think a leader has to pay attention to. So there's no chapter in the book about leadership. Maybe there probably should be. But the book is based on the fundamental principles that leaders have to pay attention to. But in this show today, we're going to talk about what leaders need to pay attention to at a personal level, as well as what organizations need to pay attention to from a business level, to help kind of drive that. So, Dave, when we talk about the passages of leadership or the evolution of leadership and the model that you've created, which is a very intriguing model, if you'd speak to that, just to kind of give people an idea of where we're headed with our conversation today.
Well, when you spoke to the personal level, what you and I have paid attention to for years is the resources that you have as an individual. If you can't access them clearly and well, and Shannon last week spoke very nicely to the importance of context, strengths that you have are not strengths or weaknesses until you pay attention to the context and the situation. What we did with the model was to pay attention to how, as you continue to grow, you need to reference who you are and what your resources are to the situation. So the model starts with your core values, which is also important for the organization to identify. and go through. So, for instance, the elements in the core values might be, and each organization can determine it for themselves, but often it's customer service, quality, integrity, innovation, respect for others, those kinds of values, which are core values. And then you step into the specific work skills that you have, be it around computers, engineering, a business segment that you're working with, like the supply chain. And you need to know the specifics that are connected to the business and the business awareness. Those are the specific skill matrix pieces. If it's in manufacturing, it's lean manufacturing, those components. And that's just the knowledge that you need, and that's at a base level. Often that's the primary pieces where a person steps into an organization early on. I've had the fortunate advantage of being with organizations for a long period of time, and have seen individuals come in, develop some core competencies, skills. And then when we start speaking to competencies, we often have that related to the what commonly is used as the term emotional intelligence, which simply has to do with the clarity of knowing yourself, managing yourself well, understanding how that works with others, and then being able to use that in the effective relationships that you build in an organization that really account tremendously for your success in working with teams and communicating and in influencing across the organization. Those are all the key components that start to build as you have an individual role in an organization, as you move into management and then leadership. And I tend to like to make some distinctions between those two. Managing is really much more about the paying attention, how you staff an organization, how you manage and measure work, hold others accountable, and pay attention to the business results. That's the transactional piece of doing the business. And then as you step into the real leadership role, where you start managing managers, you're going to end up paying attention to the coaching of those people, engaging them with inspiring vision, and really exercising some good business acumen around the strategic thinking that you're doing.
Well, and so let's talk then to the component piece of maybe even the Peter principle as that evolves, and that people get promoted beyond their level of skill sets or abilities. But is it true then that high performing people usually are reluctant to change because they go back to what got them there and what makes them the most comfortable and what they know? And they need to learn to shift from doing the work to getting work done through others.
Well, as Shannon talked about yesterday with our last session, the change of context. So as you go from managing yourself to managing others, the competence that you have at getting work done through yourself, and so for instance, your success in understanding how to do the scheduling for an organization, if you're in a schedule role, and your attention to detail and how you handle those details as you then are managing a group of schedules, it's critical for you to be able to shift your context, your orientation to that work, so you're paying attention to the people doing the work rather than the work itself. And then your tendency to possibly micromanage would start showing up. Now, that might be that it's just a matter of starting to get awareness for your strength in controlling details is not going to be helpful when you are looking to inspire others or pay attention to simply keeping them focused and motivated. That'll be different than you attending to all the details. So sometimes it's just a matter of shifting the attention and giving feedback to the individual so that they can start to let go of what got them where they were successful in one role, but not at the next role.
It's like moving from a superintendent role and a plant manager to an operations manager to then a logistics manager to the plant manager then to the regional operations manager. But, you know, as you look at and kind of talking about what you talk about managing self and then managing others and then managing managers and then becoming that business unit manager or that group manager or even an enterprise manager, the levels that you go through and the shifts and changes in your values and your core responsibilities and your thinking style needs to change and evolve as you go, and many leaders don't make that transition.
Oh, absolutely, and I'd certainly emphasize the thinking style piece, your ability to look at a much broader context rather than the details and the specifics. It also means that and Shannon nicely spoke to the ability to be able to stretch so that you can pay attention to details when they're pertinent, and then when they are not, you can let go of them and look at the bigger picture and not just stay in the details. So your ability to stretch, in this case, your thinking and conceptual skills is really critical. And if you're too rigid or too detailed and not able to shift, then you end up not being able, you used the term Peter principle, you are then unsuccessful at the next higher level, even though you might have been the absolutely best at what you did at the earlier level.
Yeah, so a great marketing manager who really understands the world of marketing, as he gets into that enterprise manager role, he then begins to move his efforts back toward marketing if he feels that's the gap in the organization. And then when you look at some leaders in the organization who are say, come up to become president, CEO, who is a former accountant or controller, well, guess what the focus is of the business? Or the operations manager who becomes president, or the sales manager who becomes president, and guess what happens to the mindset of those organizations based on kind of the mental background of where that person's been, other than spreading and looking at things from a broader perspective.
The term learning agility has certainly showed up in much of the current literature, and it speaks to that piece of being able to broaden out your way of conceptualizing the level that you're responsible for.
So as we've kind of just opened up the show, and as we get ready to kind of go into the rest of the show, we're trying to set the stage for understanding the components of what, you know, moves things along in the world of leadership. And when we come back from the break, as we get ready to take our next break, we're going to get into personality and competencies. And there's a number of competency models out there. Dave's developed one called the Leadership Competency Inventory that we use. It's a great tool. But we're going to talk about, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about personality, competencies, and the common dimensions of personality in successful leaders. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with my guest, Dr. Dave Watterson, also a very esteemed business colleague I worked with for almost 20 years in my work. Dave's background encompasses well over 40. And we're going to talk more as we move forward about leadership and as we move into this next segment. You can check us out at the web at www.theeg.com or call us at 866-472-5790 if you've got questions, or email us at rick@theeg.com. We look forward to having you back after the break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the show, What's Leadership Got to Do With It? You're listening to myself and Dr. Dave Watterson. And in this segment of the show, we're going to get into personality and competencies and what common dimensions of behavior are critical in successful leaders and how we can do. And in the third session, we'll move to more of the assessment roles to be able to identify that from a pure self-development level. But Dave, speak to the fact of personality and how a personality impacts the competency, or perhaps even, which we're going to talk about in the fourth segment, about derailers, how personality plays a huge factor in a person's ability to really establish a strong, specific competency.
Well, there's been quite a bit of conversation about is personality the same as competence, and the confusion around we're talking about behaviors in both circumstances. So if you're influencing, there are certain personalities that influence probably better than others. But whether you're particularly dominant, which is more of a personality characteristic, or not, the way you influence, you can still be influential and not necessarily be terribly dominant. But you need to learn that, which is goes back to what you've talked about before, is the criticalness of understanding yourself and the self-awareness piece. So finding out what your personality is assists you to be able to then start to shape and develop your abilities to influence, which is one of the competencies that we use in the list of competencies associated around good leadership. So understanding your dominance, and I like to speak constantly to the effect of the importance of balance. So a little of something could be good. A lot may not be better. To be reasonably dominant, meaning that you like to have a strong hand in controlling or directing a situation, doesn't mean that if you're extremely dominant that it's not much better. So it really depends on the context, the set of circumstances, and your understanding when to increase or decrease that element of your personality to be able to fit it, situational appropriateness, to the set of circumstances. That's why it's so nice to see that, for instance, in influence, dominance is important. Certainly having an awareness of what's going on around you and paying attention to that, liking to move things forward, looking for change, and the ability to manage effectively change, both in inspire it as well as keep it on course, and certainly the ability to do all that with a good degree of integrity will give you an idea of how well you're able to show up in your capacity to influence. We have taken competencies and then used the measures that we have, the 360 measures around competence, and we've also then mapped that to the personality dimensions to see what key personality elements are relative to each of the competencies. The capacity to demonstrate empathy is certainly connected to much of the ability to effectively coach and support others. And there are a number of other personality dimensions connected with the competencies that as somebody is able to learn that, they become that much more effective in their leadership.
So when you look at competencies across a broad spectrum, it's a person's ability to be able to differentiate their personality and behavioral tendencies, such as if I'm a very conservative individual who doesn't like risk, and I'm very structured and very practical and very pragmatic and very systematic and very methodical. Mm-hmm. And that's my general personality. The behaviors that emerge as I am challenged with growing an enterprise or setting strategic direction or reestablishing a strategic initiative, then what happens to my ability to do that, Dave, if I'm that structured, conservative person who doesn't like risk?
Well, you're going to have a tendency to overanalyze and spend too long looking at the limitations of something, and it would be difficult for you to establish a balance in it. That would be the most likely predictor of how you're going to step into that situation. Somebody that knows that, if they're going to step into that, can either augment that with somebody to challenge them to pay attention to that issue, which can certainly assist in being able to get through and navigate that circumstance without the downfalls of over-exercising that personality tendency.
Well, so then based on that, and I'll just throw out a statement, and that is that, or at least a concept or an idea for people to think about and for us to explore as we wrap up the second segment, but is it possible to grow leaders unless you really have strong identification of what your competencies need to be, and also for people to understand the shifts they need to make to be more successful in a leadership role and be able to have a way to get the feedback, if you will, on where they're perhaps falling short?
Well, I think it's critical that an organization take, for instance, a list of competencies. They can use any of the lists of competencies and identify for each of those segments of the business what are the key competencies that are critical to success. And that therein, as an individual steps into that with their own assessment of themselves, they can match up which ones are going to line up well with that core set of competencies that are seen as significant and which ones are going to be contraindicated in those situations where you can see that your strength is going to be a weakness in this situation. You can start learning at either compensating for it or developing those competencies better so that you're not just going in and get blindsided and then try to scramble to learn those competencies.
So to the point that we established in last week's show, we talked about the six fundamental things that are critical in terms of having a successful leadership program, which is why we spoke to the fact of really understanding what your business model is and what your business drivers are and what your strategic intent really is, and then being able to line up those competencies are going to help you accomplish that. If you've got a football team and your strategy is to run the ball, but you don't have any running backs or any tailbacks, it's just
right.
It's not going to work. So when you look at deploying talent and identifying talent, and the whole piece around succession planning versus talent development, I think some people get confused on recognizing that understanding how to fill the pipeline is different from a succession planning program.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also continuing to not only monitor it, but also be able to, the piece that you speak to and the organization's first step is to understand what their business model or business strategy, in the business strategies coming out of that. And that way you can align your talent with those business strategies and not have them out of sync.
So David, session we talked about making sense of testing, one of the new assessments that you developed has an expatriate scale. And as you look at even going further into leadership development and expansion of leaders, then you take it to another level and you look at an expatriate assignment and the challenges that come into working in a country such as France versus a company such as China or even Germany. It takes it to another level, does it not?
Oh, yes. Well, again, there you have another context, and it's very advantageous to say, given my nature, given the nature of the role that I'm going to play in the business and the culture that I'm going to be in, what are going to be the challenges that I can anticipate? How can I prepare for them and modify what it is that I do so that I don't end up being overly surprised?
So I remember asking one executive that I was being asked to interview and evaluate for a position in Europe. And I asked a very simple question. I said, how much time have you spent really understanding the culture you're going to go work in? And what do you think his response was? I didn't even think about that.
Yes, very little.
Yeah. So, and of course,
paying a lot of attention to the role is typically what happens, and seeing the effect that it's going to have, and working with those around them as well as within the culture, sometimes gets overlooked.
So as we look then, there's got to be a way for an individual to provide that or to obtain that strong feedback to be able to help them start to engage their brain, if you will, in terms of where they're going and what they're doing and what shifts they need to make in terms of who they are and moving from supervision to management to leadership. And then as you move into various levels of leadership, the transition of all that as it evolves, there's got to be a way to have a strong feedback loop and a way to assess an individual's talent besides just performance reviews. And Dave, you've spent a lot of work looking at behaviors of leaders, and a lot of that work is, most of that work has been done through your use of the 16PF, which was the listeners that have come to listen to the show, they'll know that that's kind of a staple for us, is that particular behavioral model that we use, personality traits. But as we look at that, we're going to come back and speak more to that, but I've got about a minute or so before we go to break, but let's just talk real quick about assessments as a means of being able to help that leader drive that knowledge base for themselves.
Well, it's an interactive process, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, but it's the further fleshing out an understanding of how who we are, in this case, in our personality, meshes with the things that we do within the competencies, the behavioral context within the business.
So we're going to get ready to go to break here. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. You can check us out on the web at www.theeg.com, or you can send us an email at rick@theeg.com and answer your questions, or for Dr. Watterson. We've been talking about competencies in this particular segment. Dr. Watterson has developed a very robust outline called the Leadership Competency Inventory that we've adopted with our clients. It's a great tool for those who want to understand more about what a competency really looks like. We spoke last week about what we did with Shannon at Corporate Express and their competencies and how we linked development and personality back to the competencies. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about our role as consultants or executive coaches, if you will, and our role in terms of how we help facilitate the awareness around that executive for a greater outcome. So we'll see you back after the break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. Do you have a question or comment about today's program? Please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back, and thanks for listening in to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. The program was founded off the idea of writing the book that hopefully will be ready for publishing end of December. But the book is also called What's Leadership Got to Do with It. It's based on 20 years of consulting and 10 years of personal ownership in business and 10 years of work in the corporate world and international world. And fundamental things I think are critical for businesses that most leaderships, a lot of the leaders don't pay attention to. It's in the fundamental five I speak to in the book are what's your corporate culture? Number two, what do your individual contributors look like and how are you developing them? Chapter three is about group dynamics and how groups need to play well together to be able to execute. Chapter four is about your strategic intent and your business plan and your business initiative, and that hope is not a business plan and a budget's not a business plan. And then chapter five is about the structure that you need to operate your business in a way that allows you to go to market quickly and ease of doing business that are critical things that leaders need to pay attention to. But as I mentioned, there's no chapter in the book about leadership per se, because that's what leaders need to look at. But last week's show and this week's show is about leadership and what it takes to be successful in leadership. And we were going to come back from the break and talk about kind of the assessment process that Dave uses and what I use, and the battery of assessments that go into and the process that goes into that whole assessment and that whole feedback loop that comes into play. So Dave's done a lot of work in the world of leadership for 40 years. I've done 20 years worth, and the research and things that we have been able to allow us the luxury of really seeing things play out from a personality standpoint. And of course, the 16 PF that I spoke to helps us do that at a much deeper level than your typical assessment such as a Myers-Briggs or maybe a Caliper or some of the others that are on the market. So, Dave, if you'd speak to kind of the assessment value and specifically the 16 PF and the WPI that you've created in its approach.
Well, as we've talked about, the importance of looking at the context and then identifying the key competencies helps you identify the ideal or the preference and the key strengths, competency strengths that it's important to have. And then when you're going to then say, how do I match up to that, it's valuable to use an effective means of assessing that has attention to the aspects to who you are. And we as individuals certainly aren't simple. And so it's important to have an instrument that can measure that in a reliable manner, and one that's been validated in a number of different business circumstances. It's good to have one that's been around for a long time and has a lot of good solid validities to a wide range of applications. That gives you the capacity to then see what match to the target that you're looking at, what areas would be beneficial to gain added training, and then most importantly, the experiences that will assist you in really learning what you're going to need to learn to perform effectively in that target range. It's really the development cycle is pay attention to the target, assess yourself with a reliable instrument, come up with the areas and identify the key one or ones that can be then paid attention to. Pay attention to the situation or set of experiences that will be key to learn, and then go into that situation. One of the things that I know that you do, and certainly I do, is not only provide the feedback as far as where somebody stands and direct them, give them some guidance towards taking accountability for learning new behaviors or stretching the behaviors that they have, but it's also helping them look back at that set of experiences to really see what they've learned and how they can go forward from that independent of necessarily whether it's always been 100% successful or not. A lot of the learning that we get is when we look back and discover things that didn't go so well and can see what to do differently that would allow us to be even that much more effective.
Well, to that point, where I was headed with that is when you look at the breadth and depth of some instruments versus other instruments, speaking specifically to the 16PF and compare it to, let's say, a Myers-Briggs or predictive index, which each only possess four dimensions of personality, where the 16PF factors in 15, the one of them being problem solving or thinking skills. But there are literally 15 different behaviors across a spectrum of five broad ranges to include emotional intelligence and emotional resilience that a lot of instruments don't pick up. And when you look at executive assessment and executive evaluation using not only the 16PF but maybe even a battery of assessments to help identify, you know, true strengths across the emotional intelligence, emotional resilience, your deep-seated personality issues, and thinking skills.
Mm-hmm. Well, and therein, points to the depth of who we are as individuals and the importance of using an instrument that can fully embrace that, keeping in mind that then it's a reducing it down into the key linked focus areas that will give you the most benefit relative to who you are and assist you to see how to apply that in the situations where it'll be most valuable.
So, and then at a deeper dive then, excuse me, it's the 360 feedback that pulls in the competencies. So that now in a true feedback loop system, where most organizations simply rely on a 360 for its imperative feedback, when you tie in assessments and you tie in the biodata from a person's background and you tie in the 360 feedback on what other people see from the competencies and the behavioral things that emerge, and you provide a level of interviews that really gets at the heart of people being able to talk about or reveal certain maybe uncomfortable or unpopular things to say that may not be pulled out in the 360 that you do in individual interviews, the richness then that you get really allows then you to go forward. So when you look at then, you know, gentlemen like Dave and myself and even other consultants, you know, our role in organizations is to help facilitate learning and awareness. And the tools that we use are sometimes of question with certain people because they're not familiar with the 16PF. They are familiar with the Myers-Briggs, but most people are very familiar with the 360. And in most cases, most 360s really don't yield the benefit. But when they're used as a sole component piece to leadership, or it's used as a checklist for leaders, then the leadership piece goes nowhere. So what's been your experience with that, Dave?
Well, as with many things, the more you use a variety of feedback mechanisms, the increased likelihood is that the individual will be faced with the key areas that will most contribute to their growth. And that's given that they're willing to address it, and the organization then provides them with the support to not only learn it from a either course or training, but also put them in a set of experiences that will allow them to really do that. Sometimes it's almost the organization's willingness to put them into a situation that might not be catering to their strength, but ironically would be a key learning area for them to actually then develop what it is they're really going to need at the next higher level.
So when you look at then pulling together, you know, all those component pieces, a battery of assessments, not just in our battery, we will use for an executive's assessment, we will probably use and incorporate the 16PF, Dave's Watterson Personality Inventory. We may use the Hogan in there. We're going to talk more to derailers in the last segment, but where people kind of get upside down. But we'll also use the Watson-Glaser, which measures critical thinking skills from inductive-deductive reasoning. We use a Thurston test of mental alertness, which incorporates in then your cognitive ability. We use a spatial relationships measurement that looks at innate intelligence. And we use a number of different personality tools to really look at a person's broader scope. So when you add those component pieces and you add in then the person's behavior, they speak to the behavioral aspect of what you're trying to help an executive understand by doing a battery that's in depth that, again, many organizations don't usually utilize.
Well, you're able to bring as best as possible some key measures of the I've referred to it earlier in the show, the resources that an individual has. You are the enterprise, and you bring that to the job, to the leadership challenge that you have in front of you. The 360 provides at least some of the feedback to individuals, which allows them to hear how those resources get played out in a general context, or actually a very specific set of contexts related to that job. And shaped to the leadership challenge that they have. In the 360, it can be shaped to the organization, if and even to the division or the type of the business that it's directed to, in order to bring out how well they're actually performing to the criteria of the organization. And so you can see here are resources brought. Here's how it plays out, and here are the adjustment areas that would be most beneficial to pay attention to.
So in other words, if we have a 360, and the things that we're looking to evaluate that person on from a 360 standpoint aren't really aligned with what the competencies are you want them to develop, you're really not comparing apples to apples, then, are you?
No, of course not. And you'll get sawdust instead of applesauce, I guess.
So when we look at the 360 process, it maps back to the thing we talk about of one of the fundamental components of a successful leadership program, and that is if you don't have a clearly established set of competencies and or values, and you're not aligning that with the leadership expectations, and you're not measuring that against the leader's ability to deliver to the model, then really you're not helping that executive learn to grow, and you're not really focusing on the competencies necessary for success as you've defined in your organization. So as we wrap up this segment, you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with my guest, Dr. Dave Watterson, also a very esteemed colleague, and we worked together on a number of situations that have been just a great learning experience for me to tap into this gentleman's knowledge. And we are going to take a quick break and come back, and we're going to wrap up the show talking about derailers and, you know, what gets an executive upside down and, you know, and the unfortunate thing where interventions come into play and an executive gets in trouble and winds up losing their job, not because of their technical experience, but because of their lack of the soft skills or some of the business skills that they need to have. So we'll see you back after the break.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the show. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with my guest, Dr. Dave Watterson, and we're going to talk in this segment about derailers and what that means and what that looks like. So when we look at derailers, it's about the things that cause executives to get upside down, and it really is driven in many ways by a lack of individual's personality that allows them to get to the level they need to get at. But it's also coupled with the fact that they may not have the competency as well. They might have the behavior but not the competency. But if you don't have either, derailment is certainly likely to happen. And by derailers we mean where executives get in a situation where they're not as effective or and not effective at all in many ways in their role and wind up costing the organization money and winds up costing them, in some cases, unfortunately, their job. But they speak to the strength overused becomes a weakness, and how when we look at derailers, one of the things that the assessment process helps us look at is things around emotional control or emotional resiliency or being able to balance things. A recent example was a very senior-level executive and working with a very large organization was just let go because he started to get on, when the pressure mounted, his inability to cope and his domineering style and his demanding style and his confrontational style emerged to such a point as in so much confrontation because he couldn't get past some of the things that were in his way and unfortunately derailed his career. But if we can help executives head that off, it would be critical. So they speak to the derailers component piece.
Well, the often derailing is what a number of individuals, include Lominger, kind of points out as being the overuse of a strength. So certainly liking to be in charge, liking to be in control, exercising control is very helpful in a leadership role, and you could almost call it necessary. But when overused, particularly in circumstances where the importance of letting others take control of the responsibilities that they have, if they over-exercise, over-dominate, try to exercise a higher degree of control and dependence on their own thinking, it can be terribly disruptive and particularly stifles the growth of the individuals underneath them, as well as when they go to exercise their own learning and feel like they're making their own contributions. If the leader is dominating so much, it very much can not only disrupt the others, but can actually interfere with successful delivery of the success of the organization. They might be outthinking the other individuals. The other individuals often have a better idea about what's actually going on, and thus they're not allowed to act in as effective fashion as they might.
How do derailers and denial come into play?
Well, certainly when you have something that's happening and the human brain actually, interestingly, likes to make us comfortable. And so denial can play a role in resolving that it's not as bad as you think. Things aren't, you tend to start protecting. The ego comes to play and you start wanting to have it be you. And so you try to control the circumstance. We certainly have in the news a number of situations where people have tried to control the situation and the people around them by just not paying attention to what's really happening.
So when an executive gets then to the point where an intervention is necessary, and and they're not paying attention to the feedback from the 360, or they're not paying attention to the what the assessments are telling them, or they're looking to get vindicated that they're okay, or it, you know, something happened because of something, and people like you and I are brought in to look and evaluate the situation. You know, we may use the 16PF, we may use the WPI, we may use the Hogan, which has the Hogan has a specific section on derailleurs. And so we try to use maybe the most ideal or even a battery assessment to help that executive look at that, but sometimes they still don't see it. Is that true?
Well, sure. There's a tremendous capacity of individuals to not necessarily own or acknowledge what they've either gotten used to, what they're comfortable with, or what they see as being correct, and they can have, I used the word before, denial. They can have quite a bit of built up reasons why they don't think it is the way it is. Ironically, sometimes senior leaders that have gotten to a place of controlling the situation and including controlling the feedback long enough may actually be convinced. We know that we can get convinced that a situation is a certain way and have all kinds of reasons and not be listening to that feedback. And sometimes it takes a fairly abrupt reality test to be able to have the individual see that it's not as they've made it out to be.
Well, you know, one of the largest examples I have of that is, and I know, Dave, in 40 years that you've got tons of examples, and I've got tons also, but, you know, one of those examples was an executive I worked with who was the president of a $600 million division of an international company, an Asian company, in the manufacturing sector. We did the assessment work with him. We did the coaching work with him. I even flew to Japan and did an in-depth interviews with his peers in Japan. We did the 360 feedback. We came back. I mapped out all the things that I uncovered in my interviews, all the things that I've observed. He agreed that those were some things he needed to work on. And guess what happened 6 months later? He hadn't worked on any of them. He hadn't even attempted. He agreed that the things that we talked about and uncovered in this process, a very lengthy involved process, he did nothing with. And subsequently, guess what the organization did?
They let him go.
Well, they demoted him because that's what the Japanese do. They let you save face.
Well, that's
right?
True. Yeah.
But then he left on his own because of a lesser assignment. But, you know, when you look at the derailers and what gets in executives' ways, sometimes they can't see the forest for the trees because they don't want to listen and pay attention to it. So in the case of this gentleman, he believed he was right because – or actually he didn't change because he said, you know, these are the things that I've always done to get me to where I am, and this is why I'm successful. Why should I change?
Right.
We've got about a minute or so left. Dave, if you'd speak to that as you could. That's a tough one to cover in a minute, but...
Well, I think one of the nice things about something like the 16PF or some of the other personality instruments too, it allows you to point to some of the strengths of that people have so that it helps them let go of what got them there, to realize that it isn't completely abandoning a particular personality trait or let's say a drive to be organized or dominant, but be able to see how to modify it and use it in the appropriate context, to use Shannon's reference to it. And that way people see that it's not about fixing, and it's really about being able to shape and learn, which allows people to really become the leaders that they actually can be, and allows us to be successful in the roles that we play.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you again for being on the show and for being an esteemed colleague and
friend
and business associate. I want to thank the listeners for listening into this program on leadership, and hopefully you've listened to last week's as well. You can check us out on the web at www.theeg.com and review all the shows that are on there, or at the voiceamerica.com channel. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, and give us a call at 866-472-5790 when you have questions on the show, or email us at rick@theeg.com, and we'd be glad to see if we can answer those questions for you and help you out. So good luck to you, and well, next week's program is on hiring and interviewing, a special segment, a little bit different format of the show for next week, but nonetheless, hopefully as informative as the previous show. So we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do with It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.